Welcome. Thanks for listening to the lessons so well and so attentively, and thanks for your comments. Those mean a lot. Not just I need to hear affirmation that the lessons are helpful to you, but the particular things that some of you are pointing out, this I didn't know before, or I hadn't thought about this that way before. That's so helpful, and I'm very grateful for that. You're a very kind audience to preach to, and you're very attentive, and I'm grateful for being able to be with you. I greet you in the name of Jesus Christ, Lord of heaven and earth, he who holds the keys of death and of Hades and of our soul's salvation, which we just celebrated so well in the words that Alan brought to us. We're looking at kind of unpleasant stories. You know, we're not looking at things in the Bible that people like to read to their children at night. And particularly, the lesson we're going to look at this hour is one of those stories. It might be a story you'd read to your children if they're being disobedient to you as a warning, but you'll see pretty quickly that this is a very difficult story. It always has been for me. It's not one of the ones, by the way, that Betty Lukens ever put in her flannel graph series. This one you couldn't find. This was a little difficult to come by. So we're going to look at it today. And I want to say one more time, why are we looking at these tough stories and the gruesome events that happen? I mean, think about the things we've talked about, the flood and Uzzah and the ark and his encounter with that, or the holy wars that were conducted in which whole nations were attacked and either destroyed or driven out. Why these stories? And the reason is because they're in the Bible, so I believe they're true. I also believe that as we look deeper at some of these, we come to different conclusions than we had before. But even when we don't, we need to be able to talk to other people about those things. We keep talking about our good God, and we think he's a merciful God and a gracious God and filled with love, and yet we've got these stories that we have to reconcile with that God. And the only way I know to do that is to dive into the stories, not to ignore them. Because while we've been, in some cases, when I say we, I don't mean everybody has been. I'm not the only person that's ever spoken on these subjects. I'm sure Jeff has in the past. But if we ignore these stories and just because they're difficult, don't get into them, then we don't do a favor to the people that are out there who are skeptical that this is really the Word of God. And to our children coming up, they need to hear these stories. They need to know this is the God we serve. And in some cases, that means he is to be feared. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge. And that fear isn't always terror of him, but there is an aspect of that that is certainly important for the people of God to have. So that these stories don't create more doubt about God's mercy and his grace and his love, let's get into it. Let's take it apart and see what it really is saying for us. You may remember a movie from years ago called The Bad News Bears. I want to preach to you this morning about the Good News Bears. Now, they're not gospel bears in that they are bringing the gospel to others, but I do want to talk in preaching the bloody gospel about Elisha and the Good News Bears. The story is found in 2 Kings chapter 2, and you may say, well, I already remember that story, Ralph. I don't know why you're calling that good news. Well, there is some good news in it, but you need to remember that good news is only good to the people who respond to it. You know, so we talk about the gospel and salvation, but every time we talk about that and that's good news, that's bad news to people who don't respond to it. That's bad news to them. So what is good for one isn't for the other. And I want to look at this particular story with you. So Orlando's already read the verses to us. We're in 2 Kings chapter 2, and we're beginning in verse 23. He went up from there to Bethel, and as he was going up by the way, young lads came out from the city, and they mocked him, and they said to him, "Go up, you bald head, go up, you bald head." And when he looked behind him and he saw them, He cursed them in the name of the Lord. And then two female bears came out of the woods and tore up 42 lads of their number. And he went from there to Mount Carmel, and from there he returned to Samaria. Now, here's the way we picture that. I mean, that's the way most of us think of this story. That this is exactly what happened, and that's an awful thing, because there's nothing, you know, if you're a bear, you're pretty happy that you're getting to eat, but if you're one of those boys, and there's not 42 of them there, but you can extrapolate from that, there's 42 of them all dead. Meanwhile, there's Elisha in the background kind of emphasizing the fact you made fun of my bald head. And I want to give you some background on that story. I want to blank this, but I won't do that. I'll go back because I don't want you to keep looking at that picture. That's kind of it's kind of like watching a python eat a rat. You know, you don't like what you're seeing, but you can't look away. this story is pretty gruesome. But let me give you some background before we get to the story, and then let's talk about that picture you just saw. The background is found in 2 Kings chapters 1 and 2. And I'm not going to read it for you, but I'm going to give you the background. Elijah, and get the names, Elijah with a J, Elijah is God's prophet. And he has been giving messages to the northern kingdom of Israel. And the messages have not been kind. I mean, the kings have been pretty bad there. And he's been telling them, God's angry with you and he's going to judge you for what you're doing. But now he's come to the end of his life and he's been given a message that he's going to depart from the earth. And one of the things that he's told to do is go pick your successor before you leave. So he sees Elisha, and that story is all there. Elisha's plowing a field, and Elijah goes and puts his mantle over him. That's a mantle is his headpiece that Elijah would have worn. And there's power in that headpiece. It's the mantle of a prophet. And he takes that and he puts it over Elisha to say, come on with me. Not dragging him by it, but just kind of to anoint him that way. And then he takes it back, and Elisha becomes his protege, his intern, his disciple. And Elijah's been the enemy of the idols of Israel. I mean, the followers of the idols, Jezebel and Ahab and others who follow Baal and Ashtaroth and Asherah, man, they hate Elijah. But there's nothing they can do to him because he's God's man. And he's kind of invincible in that respect. But he's taken from the earth. Fascinating story. This chariot comes down in a whirlwind, and the chariot's made of fire with horses of fire, and they come down, and Elijah gets on board, and he's taken up in the whirlwind into heaven, and he leaves the earth, and Elisha is left there, and his mantle is there. Elijah's mantle is left behind. So Elisha puts that around his shoulders, puts it on, and he comes to this river, and he strikes the river with the mantle, and the river parts. And then he goes back to what is called the school of the prophets. And it's not an official school, like, you know, what are you? I'm a sophomore in the school of the prophets, or I graduated last year. It's not that kind of thing, but it's the group or band or cohort of the prophets. We don't know a lot about them, but they recognize Elijah as God's prophet. They knew him. I mean, he showed a great deal of power. And when Elisha replaced Elijah, when Elijah put his approval by that mantle on Elisha, one thing Elisha asked for was a double portion of Elijah's power. That's a pretty bold statement, pretty bold thing to ask for. But I need your power doubled so that people will know I am your successor. And even with that, his legitimacy is suspect. When he comes back to the school of the prophets twice, as they are going, to the place where Elijah is to be taken up, the school of the prophets come to Elisha and they say, hey, by the way, I don't know if you know this or not, but your master is being taken up. He's going to be leaving, which is kind of an insult. I mean, if anybody ought to know that, it ought to be Elisha. Right? I mean, it would kind of be like my going to Gay and saying, hey, by the way, Gay, I don't know if you know that Jeff's in the hospital. She said, well, yeah, I know that. I mean, he's my husband. I knew it before you did. And it's kind of insulting. They do that to him twice. Then when he comes back and he says, Elijah's been taken up, the prophets don't believe that. And the way I know they don't believe that is they say, can we send out some guys to look for his body? They don't think he's been taken up to heaven. They think maybe the whirlwind just kind of threw him off somewhere and he's still out there. And they're kind of hoping for that because they love Elijah, but they're not real sure about Elisha. They question the ascension. And the chapter, this chapter is filled, chapter 2 is filled with proofs of Elisha's power. The fact that he is going to replace Elijah. The prophets call Elijah your master, in that they're connecting him with Elijah. And Elisha does see Elijah ascend. He does wear his mantle. He does perform that miracle. He does rebuke the prophets for doubting Elijah's ascension. And he saves them from bad water. You know, there's death in that water and it's poisoned, and he saves them from that. Now, all of that is happening. So I want you to get the scene that there is question about who Elisha is. Is he the legitimate heir of Elijah's work as a prophet of God? It is in that context that this story is given to us about the Bethel boys. And that story, this jeering of the Bethel boys, is a problem for most of us. And here are the problems. Now let me go back, give you that picture one more time. Here's the problem we have with it. It's threefold. Number one, they're little boys. I mean, these are nice kids. They're just little. I mean, these are boys. And then the second problem we have is they're just being disrespectful. And all boys do that. I mean, boys don't know what they do. You know, when I was a boy, there were things I'd do. My father would say, son, why in the world did you do that? And I had to say, I don't know. I mean, I don't know. Why were you up on the roof? I don't know. And I'll tell you what, that doesn't stop in college. I was a public relations director at Florida College for nearly 20 years, and there were times guys would be doing things, and I'd come up on them, and they were doing something, and I'd say, what are y'all doing? They go, I don't know. Boys do that. And boys are disrespectful. I mean, they're just that way. You can drive down the road, and there'll be a group of boys, and they'll stick their tongues out at you or jeer at you. Or even chuck something at your car. It's not because they hate you particularly, or they are building a life of crime. It's just boys can be disrespectful. We've all seen kids do something like this. They're just disrespectful. And they are killed for that? And killed by that? I mean, bears killed those boys? Because they just made fun of a guy's bald head? Can't Elijah take a joke? I mean, wouldn't you find it strange if your preacher didn't have any hair on his head and a boy in the congregation said, hey, Chrome Dome, and the preacher killed him? You think that preacher would have a job after that? Yeah, making license plates in the penitentiary. So here's, this is the problem we have with this story. And she bears, I mean, you know, she bears are the worst of the bunch. It's not the males, it's the females, because they're often protecting cubs. Does God really need to feed bears children? Is that what is happening in this story? Is that really the story? And I'm going to suggest to you, it is not. That is not the case. Look, let's take another look at this text. Look at the text with me. First of all, these are lads. They're not little boys. These are not 7 and 8 year old boys going, nah, 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 nah. It's not that. They're called young lads. And you may say, well, does that really change it, Ralph? I mean, when I think of a lad, I think of a little boy. No. The word lad is used of Joseph at age 17. He's called a lad at 17. And further, in 1 Samuel chapter 15, verse 27, Saul is called lad after he became king. And Saul's not a boy king. He's not Josiah. Saul's a grown man. He's a warrior. But he's called a lad in that. Joshua, who is serving Moses as his protege, is called a lad in the Bible. Solomon, in 1 Kings chapter 3, verse 7, is referred to as a lad, and that's when he's become king. When David fought Goliath, he is already a warrior, having killed both a bear and a lion, and he's called a lad. I know, we like to think of David in that context, only a little boy David. And we almost picture him in diapers going out there or something, you know, barely able to hold up a sling, and yet he's killing Goliath. No, he is a warrior in his own right. I mean, he's killed a bear and he's killed a lion, and he didn't do that with a baby rattle. David is a lad, but he has power and strength. So don't think of these boys, because it calls them young lads, that they were 6 and 7 and 8 years old. They could have, they're probably late teens, early 20s. Now, already, that changes the way we see this story. These aren't little boys getting eaten up by bears. These are young lads who should have known better. And there's something else in the story that's really important. Did you notice where they came from? Bethel. What do you know about Bethel? Well, during the period of the divided kingdom, it is one of two cities that have been set up for idolatry. It is a linchpin in the idolatry of Israel. Now, you remember, I told you already, what was Elijah doing in his ministry? Fighting idolatry. That was his whole work, trying to keep Israel from going deeper into idolatry. Now, here's Elisha, who's inherited the work that Elijah did, and the young lads from Bethel come out of the city. Look, this isn't a matter of they were playing stickball or field hockey, and Elisha walked by, and one of the boys looked at him and said, hey, look at old Baldy over there. And then they all taunted him for a little bit. Hey, old bald head, go on up, get out of here. It's not a case of that. It says they came out from the city. There's intent. There is intent on their part. This isn't a chance encounter. They are searching for him. He's the guy who supposedly is against the idolatry of their city. Elisha's wearing God's shirt as a fan. And the Bethel boys are wearing Baal's jerseys. And they hate him. and they come out to taunt him. It's a challenge. This is a challenge from one God to another God. This is not just about boys being boys. Second, they are mocking. They're not teasing. It says they came out from the city and mocked him. They're not just teasing him. This is no light thing. I want you to think about what they said. And I think we're missing something when we think it's about how hirsute Elisha is. It's not about his hair. What they're mocking him about is his connection to Elijah. Remember, I told you this whole chapter that precedes this is about Elisha justifying who he is as Elijah's heir. Does he have a right to claim to be God's prophet now? Does he have that right? And these boys are challenging that by saying he doesn't have a head. It doesn't mean by that he doesn't have a physical head. He's not the heir apparent. He has no right to call himself a prophet of God. Where is his head, his master? Gone up. So what are they saying to him? Go up. See, it's about his going up. You who is without authority, you who has no head, you bald or naked-headed man. It may very well be that Elisha didn't have hair. That's certainly possible. Elisha was older than Elijah, apparently. But it's not about whether he had too close a haircut last week. It is about his authority. That's what the whole chapter's about. The whole chapter is about him providing evidence that he is who he says he is. So when they are mocking him, they are challenging his authority. You bald head, but what is it about? Go up. Why are they saying go up? Oh, why don't you do what you claim your master did? Go join him. Get out of here. It's not take a hike. It's take a chariot ride. Elisha, leave. Get out of here. You're useless. You might as well go up with your master. They are mocking Elisha's God. They're mocking his God. Listen, folks, that's no small thing. It's one thing for you to make fun of me. It's another thing for you to make fun of my God. Call me whatever you want. That's okay. I'll take that. But don't talk about my God that way. And that's what the young lads of Bethel, the Bethel boys, are doing. They are challenging Elisha's authority. All right, let me give you one last point. They are mauled, not killed. Go back and look at the text. It says, two female bears came out of the woods and tore up 42 lads of their number. Okay, and you think about that? 42 of their number. How many of them went? See, this is not a couple of boys standing under a tree. A bald-headed guy comes by, and they make fun of him. And two bears drop down out of the branches of the tree and eat him alive. It's not that. This is a mob. This is what we call a mob. They're threatening him. 42 of their number are torn up. But notice, torn up. And you might say, yeah, tore them into pieces, like that first picture we saw. Tore them into pieces. That's not the word you'd use. That word is translated by the word mauled in other places. So, you'll read a story every once in a while that a dog got loose. It's usually one of those sinister dogs. It's a pit bull or a chow or something like that, got loose and mauled a neighbor's kitten. When you read that, do you think the kitten's alive or dead? It's alive. That's what we tend to think, alive. If it had killed it, you'd have said what? Killed it. Mauling is different. Now, I'm not saying it's in, I'm not saying there's nothing to it. Man, I'm telling you, I don't want to be mauled by a bear. I don't want to be mauled by a chow. I don't want to be that. But this is a phrase that we use. My dad used to use that phrase of me. He would say, son, you do that one more time, I'm going to tear you up. I never thought he's going to rip my arms off and my legs and my head and leave me lying there a bloody torso. I never thought that. I understood the term. Tear me up was a different concept. And that's what it says. And it says it because the bears didn't kill the boys. Tore them up. Now think about it. Think about it. How many bears you got? Two. How many boys were attacked? 42 of the number. Why only 42? Were they the ones that were chanting loudest? Or were they just the slowest? Did the bears only get 42 because they got full? They talked to each other. One of them said, whew, 21's my limit. I can't eat any more boys. This is an all-you-can-eat buffet, but I've had 21. I'm done. That's my limit. Is it that? Is that why 42 were mauled? No. Why were 42 mauled? The others got away, didn't they? They got away. Why? How'd they get away? They ran. These may very well be the slowest boys. Or the ones that thought they might be able to fend off the bear by waving their arms or yelling. But 42 of them got it. If the bears, think about this, if the bears had killed 42 boys, how long does it take a bear to kill 42 boys? Two bears. Make 21 each. I mean, even if the bear has the most awesome swipe with a paw. I'm not trying to be gruesome here, and I'm not trying to be funny. But if the bear could kill a boy each swipe of the paw, you still have to hit 21 times to kill half of the 42 boys. Are the boys just standing in line waiting? The bear calls number four, boy steps up, bam, he's dead. Number five, he steps up, bam, he's dead. Are they standing in line waiting? What are you going to do? What are you going to do if you're a boy and a bear starts slapping and killing others? You're going to run. Can that bear really run down and kill 21 of them before they can get away? That's not likely, folks. We've read that story and never thought about it. Now, could God have intervened and turned their legs to cement? Yes. I'm not saying that couldn't happen. But if God just wants to kill the boys, he doesn't need bears to do that. But if he wants to send a message to Bethel that there's a new prophet on the scene and he does not tolerate laughing about his God. Notice it's Elisha who curses the boys, the lads, for his God, in the name of his God. He's not cursing them like we think about people cursing. You blankety blank blank kids, get out of here. It's not that. He curses them in the name of the Lord. And the result is two she-bears suddenly show up. I'm telling you, this is what it looks like. Now, that's a fierce scene. But you'll notice they're all going to get away. Now, they're not getting away without being hurt. I feel for this guy. And he probably is feeling the effects of that. But there's 42 of them that do get mauled, and two bears could wade into a group of young men swiping right and left, and they could clean house on 42 of them, but the rest got away. And those got away. They're mauled. They're torn up. They're not killed. That's the word. Literally, it means to tear or rip. And it takes a little time for a bear to kill one person. Even our bears today, the grizzlies, I mean, they don't kill usually with just one swipe or one bite. It takes a while to do that. So let me give you a conclusion and we're done. Can't God's messengers take a joke? Absolutely. Is God so sensitive that people can't say something funny without him killing people? Yeah. He can take those things. But idolatry is never funny. And idolatry is spiritual adultery. And it's never allowed, permitted, tolerated, or laughed at. Not by God, not by God's people. That's the real story of Elisha, the boys of Bethel, and the two she-bears. I hope that story helps you to understand it in a different way than that first picture we saw. I think this is an accurate portrayal of what happened. And what it says is, don't mess with God's authority. Don't play games with that. It's never funny. And God doesn't tolerate that. I don't think he sends she-bears into church buildings, swiping away at people. But he does not tolerate that. His word is truth. And the fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. Be wise. If there's something we can do to help you, we're singing this song of encouragement just for you. Come to the Lord Jesus. Find rest in him. Take his yoke upon you and learn of him. Learn accurately of him. He's a God who deserves to be honored. He's a Christ who deserves to be followed. If we can help you, let us know how while we stand and sing.